Vasana Vikasana Lineksanaya. Yes, you do. Yanabi Padma Bhava Narahama Samidya.
Loka Trayo Pakarano Yad Anugrahena.
Loka Trayo Pakarano Yad Anugrahena.
Tasmai Namastu Uttarasta Bhavaya Yoga.
Tasmai Namastu Uttarasta Bhavaya Yoga. Nabi Padma Bhavana Rahama Samidya. Loka Trayopakarano Yadanu Krahena. Tasmai namasta udarasta bhavaya yoga. Nidra vasana vikshaya nalikshe shayanaya. Yanavi padma bhavana rahama samidya. Loka tayo pakaranoya nugrahena. Tasmai namasta udarasta bhavaya yoga. Ladies. Yana vipadma bhavana rahama samidya. Loka trayopakarano yadanu krahena. Tasmai namasta udarasta bhavaya yoga. Nidra vasana vikshana lineksanaya. Yanabi padma bhavana rahama samidya. Loka trayopakarano yadanu krahena. Tasmai namasta udara stabhavaya yoga. Nidra vasana vikasana likekshanaya. Okay, synonyms. Synonyms. Yat. Whose. Nabhi. Navel. Padma. Lotus. Bhavanat. From the house of. Aham. I. Asam. Became manifested. Idya. O worshipable one. Lokatraya. The three worlds. Upakarana. Helping in the creation of. Yat. Whose. Anugrahena, by the mercy, Tasmai, unto him, Namaha, my obeisances, Te, unto you, Udarastha, situated within the abdomen, Bhavaya, having the universe, Yoga Nidra of Avasana. After the end of that transcendental sleep. Vikasat. blossoming. Nalina ikshanaya. Unto him whose opening eyes are like lotuses. Translation. O object of my worship, I am born from the house of your lotus navel. You could repeat. For the purpose of creating the universe by your mercy. All these planets of the universe were stationed within your transcendental abdomen while you were enjoying sleep. Now your sleep having ended, your eyes are open like blossoming lotuses in the morning. That's nectar. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Brahma is teaching us the beginning of archana regulations from morning, 4 o'clock, to night, 10 o'clock. Early in the morning, the devotee has to rise from his bed and pray to the Lord. And there are other regulative principles for offering Mangal Arati early in the morning. Foolish non-devotees, not understanding the importance of archana, criticize the regulative principles, but they have no eyes to see that the Lord also sleeps by his own will. The impersonal conception of the Supreme is so detrimental to the path of devotional service that it is very difficult to associate with the stubborn non-devotees who always think in terms of material conceptions. Impersonalists always think backwards. They think that because there is form in matter, spirit should be formless. Because in matter there is sleep, in spirit there cannot be sleep. And because the sleeping of the deity is accepted in archana worship, the archana is maya. All these thoughts are basically material. To think either positively or negatively is still thinking materially. Knowledge accepted from the superior source of the Vedas is standard. Here in these verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that archana is recommended. Before Brahma took up the task of creation, he found the Lord sleeping on the serpent bed in the waves of the water of devastation. There, sleeping exists in the internal potency of the Lord, and this is not denied by pure devotees of the Lord like Brahma and his disciplic succession. It is clearly said here that the Lord slept very happily within the violent waves of the water, manifesting thereby that he is able to do anything and everything by his transcendental will and not be hampered by any circumstances. The Mayavadi cannot think beyond this material experience, and thus he denies the Lord's ability to sleep within the water. His mistake is that he compares the Lord to himself, and that comparison is also a material thought. The whole philosophy of the Mayavada school, based on not this, not that, neti neti, is basically material. Such thought cannot give one the chance to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is. I will keep it short. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nevashesha Srinivadi Vastachare Satarane Vancha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Pyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. How fortunate are we to have this knowledge, to have this nectar We use the word nectar all the time. It's kind of overused in a sense. Nectar, you know, bliss, these words, they roll off our tongue. But when you stop to think, there's no better way to describe these verses that Srila Prabhupada's given us that were condensed by disciplic succession. He read, he studied Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, read and studied Srila Bhakti Vinod, read and studied. It came down and down and down and made this delicious para, thick para, sweet para. And he gives it to us, and we just kind of read it and get on with our lives. But this chapter is very nice. I'm using my phone because I wasn't expecting to give class, and I didn't have much facility with a computer or anything. But Prabhupada makes important points in this verse. The first point he's making is about archana. And another gift from Srila Prabhupada. Actually, I'm fortunate enough to live in Montclair, Oakland. I live 10 minutes from the Berkeley Temple, although I'm actually more associated with ISV. But the deities in the Berkeley Temple are the first ISKCON deities, carved by Shama Sundar way back, and a gift from Srila Prabhupada to us, the beginning of deity worship. It started there for us. And Prabhupada explained the importance of archana. He didn't waste any time immersing us in Krishna's activities, his actual activities in the spiritual world. Archana is based on Krishna's schedule in the spiritual world. So we get up for Mangal Arti, it's when Krishna's rising, and we offer prayers, and then we wait to greet him after his mother dresses him, and then he has breakfast, and then he does his whatever daily duties he does, playing with the cows and calves, killing demons. And Prabhupada gave us that without us even knowing what it was. So he gave us the schedule. And coming out of the darkness of our many, 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 many births and our ignorance, trying to follow the schedule was at first difficult. Who gets up that time of day? Many of us were just going to sleep that time of day after partying in America. So getting up was difficult, but sweet at the same time. Difficult but sweet. I remember I joined in 1973 in this temple. And as difficult as it was, you didn't want to miss it. Because it was kind of like chutney. Prabhupada says, so hot you can't stand it, but so sweet you can't resist it. And that's how archana was for us in the beginning, because we had material minds, material senses, and to engage them in devotional service took a little discipline. So Prabhupada gave us this method to harness our senses, to start developing the higher taste. And I'm sure that all of you are on different, I see there's new faces here and old faces here. So wherever you're at in this process, I'm sure you all have a shared experience of finding that the material stuff that you used to like suddenly is not so fun anymore or not as attractive to you anymore, and consciousness is being transformed by the process of devotional service. Along with archana, of course, is our sadhana. So here we are, we're regulating our senses, we're controlling our actions, And we're calling out to Krishna, asking him for more and more service. And the more that happens, the more he reciprocates, and the more he reciprocates, the sweeter it is, the happier we get. And that was the first point that Srila Prabhupada made in this purport. Then Prabhupada goes on to talk about Mayavadis, which I remember as a young devotee when I first joined, and Prabhupada was here a lot. He spent much time here. This temple was the center. It was the way Vrindavan and Mayapur are today. It was the center of ISKCON. So we all the swamis came through here. There weren't many back then, but they came through here and gave classes. And Prabhupada would sit in his room and translate Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he'd give class every morning while he was here. And I remember thinking, why is he talking so much about Mayavadis? We're not Mayavadis. We all joined this movement because we're not Mayavadis. Because Prabhupada mentioned Mayavadis in every class, pretty much. He drove the point home. And one day I realized, we're all infected with it. Because Mayavad philosophy is basically the belief that I'm God, I'm not a servant of God. And that's why we're in the material world. That's what got us here. So even if we're followers of other faiths, other religions, even in Krishna consciousness, that anartha is inside of us. And Krishna gives us a formula of how to get rid of those anarthas. That's at the end of this beautiful purport that Prabhupada gives, one's left with the question, because Prabhupada's talking about how the Mayavadis get it wrong. They get it wrong. They can't accept that God has personality, that he has feelings for devotees, reciprocations with devotees, that he sleeps, that he eats. They can't see it because they're thinking materially and they're thinking of themselves and a material body, and that God must be better than a material body, so he can't do those things. But it's an actual, like a block. It's like your heart has maybe sometimes you need a stent because your arteries are blocked. It's like a kind of a consciousness block, a knot, that they can't understand. And the reason for that misunderstanding or not being able to understand is not giving anything, little bit, in devotion to Krishna. As soon as you open a teeny bit, which is why we do things like prasadam distribution. Maybe someone can't really hear the philosophy. They're not open to it. But they maybe taste something and they go, very nice. Glorifying Krishna. Glorifying prasadam. It's beginning, right? It's a seed. So until that seed is planted and until that seed develops a little bit, one can't understand these mysteries. Because Krishna is very mysterious, right? In Sri Yuksha Upanishad, it says he walks, but he doesn't walk, right? He has no hands, but he eats. So many contradictions. And when we read them, we understand that it doesn't mean he doesn't have a body or he doesn't have hands or he doesn't do these things, but that those things are transcendental. They're not the same as our things, and they're not done in the same way we do things. So the process, it all boils down. So you're left with the question, okay. Prabhupada makes the point about Archana, and then he hammers home the point about Mayavadis not getting it right. So you're left with the question, well, what is the right? What is right? What is the right way to understand Krishna? And it reminds me of about 2 weeks ago, my son, who's finally aspiring for initiation slowly, he's been reading a lot, and he asked the question. He said, Mom, how come if we have material bodies, material minds, you know, we're in the material world, how can we think transcendentally? How can we know transcendental subject matter with a material instrument? How is it possible? And Akurnath was really impressed by his question. And Akurnath pointed me to chapter, canto, 10th canto, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 87. It's the prayers of the Vedas personified. And they answer the question. Maharaj Parikit asked that very same question. How can we understand transcendental subject matter with these with this material our material senses? Yeah. So that's a beautiful chapter, and I would recommend reading it because I just really read it and I got into it. But it's a very beautiful chapter, and it describes back to this verse. This verse is about Krishna's waking up. His eyes are opening. Lord Brahma's praying. But when that happens, after the devastation, when Krishna wakes up, the personified Vedas surround him and they chant his glories and they chant the answer to this question. And the glories are amazing. They're, Krishna's glories are unending. They're expanding, always expanding, and hard to conceive of with our minds, right? But the personified Vedas explain that the process of meditating on Krishna, on hearing and chanting and archana, the things Prabhupada gave us, transforms our mind and our senses into spiritual minds and senses, into spiritual energy. Because the mind can be our, we've heard, best friend or worst enemy in spiritual life. But it really works that if you follow this process, a transformation is taking place. And I think every one of us can say that. From perception. It's something actual, tangible. It's like what Prabhupada says, when a hungry man feels satisfied from eating, you know, you don't have to tell him or explain it to him. He just knows. And that's what happens in Krishna consciousness. I was asked to be a guest speaker on one of my close friends, Jamuna, does a group, a little group, reading group with women from all over the United States that came upon Krishna consciousness through wisdom of the sages. And she asked me to join the group. And these are brand new ladies. And one of them was complaining that, you know, I kind of, you know, my friends, I kind of don't want to be around them anymore. And I don't like the things I liked anymore. And so she needed some guidance to how to satisfy those desires because they weren't being satisfied there anymore. And and she's brand new. And she was already perceiving that. So this process is special. It works. I read a couple of, let's see, from the 10th canto that I thought was really sweet. Okay, so this is a verse that's found in the Prabhupada, it's in Prabhupada's purport. I didn't read the Sanskrit, but from 10th canto, chapter 87, verse 14. And Srila Prabhupada says that this particular verse is found in three different Upanishads. He was explaining how authoritative it was. And it goes, "The one Supreme Lord lives hidden inside all created things. He pervades all matter and sits within the hearts of all living beings. As the indwelling supersoul, he supervises their material activities. Thus, while having no material qualities himself, he is the unique witness and giver of consciousness." So we can understand from these teachings that Krishna, the giver of consciousness, seated inside the heart, is giving us everything we need to come and to know him. And it's recommended in that same chapter that one should meditate on Krishna and his activities. So one thing Vaisheshika likes to do, and I'm very partial to Vaisheshika Prabhu, he likes to look words up during classes. So I looked up the word meditate, because that's another word we just kind of use a lot. And I've got to find where I put it. It's a very old word, comes from Latin. Okay, hold on. Oh, I know what I did. I wrote this with pen and pencil. So meditate means, where is it? Okay. It's a 16th century Latin word. It came from a 16th century Latin word meaning contemplate. And that came from a verb, meditare, which means to measure. So you can see how there's a certain kind of concentration that's necessary to fulfill meditation, to fulfill the description of meditation. So if we're doing our japa, our mantra meditation, it isn't really japa meditation unless we're concentrating and hearing and calling out to Krishna, the way Prabhupada says in his Radha Krishna Temple album, that beautiful thank you. I do lose words these days. The address on that album where he says, the chanting should be done like a baby crying for its mother. So that gives a little insight as to the mood that is beneficial for chanting japa. So these verses, these Bhagavatam verses, are all Prabhupada's realizations, and they're a gift to all of us. And they're only as valuable to us as we endeavor to accept them. And accepting them takes concentration and effort. If you want to get any kind of a degree in school, if you want to, get a real estate license, if you want to learn a skill, those things all take concentration. Spiritual life takes concentration and navigation. It takes navigation. There's, in today's world, we have so much facility. Social media is a wonderful thing for devotees. It keeps us all in touch. We get to hear classes from Vrindavan. We get to see pictures of deities all over the world. But it also could be a nightmare and a waste of time. So keyword is navigation, and other keyword is meditation. And I took those two, when I read Prabhupada's books, I think of those two things. And this particular verse is part of Lord Brahma praying. This is another good point. Lord Brahma's praying in the, I think it's the three verses, starting with 21 on to like 23. He's praying to the Lord to be able to do his duty nicely and not get proud. He's praying to not forget and get proud. And we know Lord Brahma had a problem once before, right? When he stole the cowherd boys. And I was thinking, if Lord Brahma is praying for that mercy, how much we need to pray for that mercy. Because to be Lord Brahma, you've perfected your devotional life. He's the guru of Narada Muni. I mean, he's Lord Brahma. And he's praying to not be proud. So a couple of points from that. One is, as I just said, if he has to pray for that, imagine how much we do. The other point is, for him to pray for that, it's an indication that it's pride is a thing and it's everywhere. I mean, it's affecting Lord Brahma, it's affecting demigods, it's worse than coronavirus, you know. So it's something to look out for. And I took a class recently. Well, it was a seminar given in ISV by Radha Raman. He's so good. He's so such a good guy. He gave this nice class on how to give a class, and he broke it up into three parts. And the first part was intention, the second part was content, and the third part was delivery. And in intention, he spoke a lot about this point, because he runs across devotees many times thinking, stopping themselves from doing different kinds of devotional service for fear that it would make them proud. So that's another thing to watch out for, because what he was saying was Krishna consciousness is the one place where you're given license to speak. You're asked to speak. If you go to a university, you can't speak. You have to get a degree. There's rules and regulations everywhere you go in order to speak. Unless you want to just rattle on a street corner, right? But in Krishna consciousness, this very sublime philosophy, very deep, sublime philosophy, we're given permission and invitation to speak. And Krishna, if you, like Lord Brahma, take example from Lord Brahma and pray to be able to convey what Prabhupada's given us, then Krishna will take care of the rest. What he said was, you might be leading a kirtan and you're first thinking, no, I don't want to do that. And then you start to lead it and it goes real good and then everybody's happy and you think, oh, I'm pretty good at this. He says, and then you see that next time it doesn't work out for you. He said, so don't be afraid, because Krishna will give you little slaps on the wrist every now and then to guide you. So this is a beautiful mystical process. Lord Brahma is praying to the Lord, and Lord Brahma is, I mean, he says the most beautiful prayers. The prayers to Lord Krishna after he steals the cowherd boys are beautiful. The Brahma Samhita is beautiful. And in this verse, again, it's just beautiful. And I guess that was... Does anybody have any comments or reflections? Yes, Pearl? Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna. No, it's for...
Hare Krishna, thank you. So you may have already answered it, and it just might have went right past me, but what was Sukadeva Goswami's answer to your son's and Maharaj Prickett's question? I think you kind of like led up to it, and then you...
He basically told the narration of that led to the prayers of the Vedas. Personified, yeah. And it's a very long, you know, but what you get out of it is the, first of all, you get out of it how wondrous Krishna is. I was even thinking how we read a verse every day, right? And the verse in Sanskrit is a beautiful meter, and it's like a poetic four lines. And then from there, we translate it into English. A little clumsier, but it's expanding, right? The English translation is usually longer. Then there's Prabhupada's purports, and they're longer still. And from those purports, devotees from all over are espousing so much of what Prabhupada's teaching. It's like that's one verse, expanding, expanding, expanding. And that's one little piece of a little piece of the knowledge that lies within the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the personified Vedas are basically just explaining how glorious and wonderful and amazing Krishna is. Yes, Ru Archita. Is that okay? Did I say okay?
Hi, Krishna Jagarini. First of all, thank you for accepting the invitation to speak on such short notice. It was just like last evening. Thank you very much. And a couple of things. You gave a very nice answer, deeper actually, than what you just gave, about the process of purification, of transforming material senses into spiritual senses. So that's the answer right there. Of course, the Vedas personified in their prayers, they go into more detail, but that was the succinct takeaway from today, that if you purify your senses by this process of archana and sadhana, then you will be able to understand even with this mind and that you have now. So, I mentioned before your class, and I think it's still appropriate at this point, that you know a lot of devotees here don't know you. So maybe you can just share how you came to Krishna consciousness.
Okay. I was born in Brooklyn, New York. Are you from Brooklyn?
I live there.
Okay. And I emerged, you know, puberty in the 60s. And it was a tumultuous time in the United States, a wonderful time, because it got us ready for Prabhupada. And by the time I was 16, 17 years old, I started questioning, because I was raised Catholic, started questioning a little deeper. I liked it. I liked the philosophy, what little there was of it. I liked the goodness of, you know, the saints. My mom got me a book on the saints, and they were selfless and devotional. That whole idea of devotion was attractive, and there's a lot of that in Catholicism. But the philosophy is flat. And when I asked questions, I had two of my father's sisters were nuns. And anytime I would ask them anything, you know, deeper, they would just say, you know, no, have faith. You know, why is God making some people, you know, born in terrible conditions and others are born beautiful and wealthy and... why isn't he fair? And what, you know, he has his reasons, just have faith, you know, this kind of thing. And I was fortunate to, I'm trying to think, go back. I think my first contact with the devotees was at a rainbow gathering. And the devotees were there and they were giving out kefir, I remember. On television. Yeah, actually, thanks, Kanka. Yeah. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada arrived in New York when I was a kid, teenager. I was with Nirkula. We were close friends. We kind of grew up together. And we were at a friend's house watching a football game. And they interrupted the show to broadcast the Swami coming to New York. And we, you know, just watched the TV. And I remember, for some reason, I just felt really moved. And I said, his feet aren't touching the ground, far out, you know. I think I was 17, Nirkula was 15 at the time. And yeah, so I did see Prabhupada, but that was it. I didn't know what he was, who he was, didn't know about Krishna consciousness, just was impressed that how he appeared. And then yeah, I met devotees at the Rainbow Gathering, and that was quick also, but we sat with them and had a little kirtan with them and still didn't know much. And I went back, because we'd moved to California, I went back to New York, and when I was there, I wanted a Bhagavad Gita somehow or other, and I cannot remember why I wanted a Bhagavad Gita. But I said to Nirkula and Brahmarupa and Tirtharthi, we've got to go to the temple, I want that book. So we went to the New York temple. Was it Brooklyn? Henry Street. Yeah, it was Henry Street. Because this was 1972. Yeah, 1972. Went to the temple, got a Gita, and then we drove back to California. So I read the Bhagavad Gita in the car the whole way back to California. And when we got back to California, we saw a sign. We were living in a cabin. We were living in a cabin in Santa Cruz in the mountains. No running water, no electricity. And there was a sign posted. Satsrup Maharaj was going to be at someone's home and giving evening classes. And Satsrup Maharaj was then traveling with a wonderful bhakta named Bhakta John, who later became Ghanasyam, who later became Bhakti Tirtha Swami. So we went every night for about a week, maybe a little longer, 10 days, something like that, to hear from Maharaj. And he took us on Harinam in Santa Cruz, and he taught us little things, taught us how to offer obeisances. And then he said, I'm going to come to your house and show you how to set up an altar. We were living together, by the way, Nirkula and I, and our then husbands. We're living together in this cabin in Santa Cruz. And he said, I'm going to come up there and show you how to run a Krishna conscious household, how to set up an altar, offer your food. And when he came up and saw how we were living, he changed his mind. he called up Karandar in here, then temple president in Los Angeles. And he asked if there was any room for us. And Karanda said, bring him down. And he asked us, would you like to come? And we said, yes, Hari Bol. And I remember it was easy. My then husband and I had one backpack between us. And I had a baby. Subal was already born. And Nirkula and Ramarupa had one backpack between them. And we just got in his van. And we came to Los Angeles, and the rest is history. We at first we were given a place. The temple had just bought the apartment building here, the one on the same side of the street, furthest one down, where the Brahmacharinis live in the front, or used to live in the front. That building was bought, but the tenants were still in it, so they gave us. Oops. They gave us an apartment on Exposition Street that was going to be torn down, And they got permission to house devotees in that building temporarily. So we stayed there for a little bit. And then we were the first people to get the apartment in that building. Because Nirkula and her then husband and me and my then husband were willing to share. Everybody on the waiting list, nobody wanted to share. And the first apartment available was the two-bedroom. So we were the first devotees in the building. It was nice. Prabhupada came there. He came to our house. That's a nice story, too. We were at Guru Puja. You know, we came to the temple. Prabhupada was in L.A. We came to Guru Puja. And I had my baby, and I left the temple after Guru Puja was over. I'm walking home, and somebody runs up to me and says, Prabhupada's on his way to your house. And I went, wow, what? And I ran in and made sure everything was... But we lived so simply, it was kind of okay. Today, I don't think it would be okay if someone dropped in on me like that, especially Srila Prabhupada. But when he came in, they spared no details. They went into every room. They opened even medicine cabinets. They opened our closets. They showed Srila Prabhupada every corner of the place. And he turned to me and he said, very nice, very clean, and gave me a really big smile. Yeah, it was wonderful. So I grew up in Los Angeles, basically. I was 19, and I moved away from here to the Bay Area in 1989. So 16 years I spent here. And I'm so happy to be here today, and I feel blessed to be able to speak to all of you. And I hope I didn't disappoint. Thank you very much.
Prabhu's one matter of housekeeping. Tomorrow the clocks after Mangal Arti, I'm sorry, after Bhagavatam class will get turned back 1 hour. That's tomorrow. After Bhagavatam class, we turn our clocks back 1 hour. Thank you.